Is it on, Daniel? Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Good. Okay, let me just move this stuff out of the way. Get it all set up. Okay, so welcome everybody. And before I start, in Bolivian churches, there's always a time in the service where they always greet each other. And in Bolivia, you greet each other with a kiss on the cheek. Now, I know we're British and we find that sort of stuff awkward. So if you want to just hug or do a handshake, that's fine as well. But I think since this is going to be about Bolivia, we'll do a thing that Bolivian churches do. So we're going to like stand up, greet each other and move around the church as well. So let's go. Hey, funky. Hi. Okay, so if everybody finds their seats. So if everybody's ready, we will now begin. Okay, so that's something that happens every Sunday in a Bolivian church. And yes, I hope you got a bit of taste of what Bolivian culture is like there. Okay, so I've known that I've always wanted to go on a mission trip like this since the end of primary school. So I've always planned on taking a gap year and doing something crazy like this. So after A-levels, I got a job to save and fund for my trip. And just want to say thank you all to those who supported me financially with this trip as well. I really appreciated it. So how I got to Bolivia. So I applied to the organization SAM, the South American Mission. And they said that I could either go to Peru or to Bolivia. And I was like, I don't want to go to Bolivia. Why would I want to go to Bolivia when I can go to Peru? Like, Peru has Machu Picchu, it's got the Rainbow Mountain. Like, Peru's way better than Bolivia. Why wouldn't I want to go to Peru? And even though it'd be tons harder in Peru, like the school I'd be working at didn't speak English, there were very few missionaries, it was all very rural, I still wanted to go. And so to finally get it into my dumb head that Peru wasn't the place for my mission trip, in October, God actually stopped that school from accepting interns during the time I wanted to go there. So I was like, oh, fine, I'll just go to Bolivia then. And so from that, I learned how direction, not intention, determines our destination. So I thought my intentions for going to Peru were correct. I was like, I'm going for God. I'm going to be doing all these great things. But really, I just wanted to go to Machu Picchu. And so, yeah. So I was going down the wrong road for my mission trip. So instead, I changed it to Bolivia. So this is my Bolivian family. And I live with them in Santa Cruz in Bolivia. And so I lived with them for 4 months. And Megan, the girl there, she joined for the last 2 months. So going from left to right, so there's Obi, he's my Bolivian dad. And then Santiago, he's 9 years old. Roxana, and then Megan, she's my age. She lives in America. And then Eric, who's 15. So the first few weeks of my trip were pretty difficult. I didn't know any Spanish, and I was having to deal with two foreign cultures, both the Bolivian and the American culture. I didn't know anybody, and only Obi in my family could speak English. So it was really hard to talk with my family at the start because, well, they couldn't speak English, I couldn't speak Spanish, so we both had to work really hard on understanding each other and getting to know each other. But as my Spanish improved, we all got really close, and yeah, we all got on really, really well. So it wasn't all plain sailing with my trip. I got ill quite a bit with fevers and food poisoning, so thank you for all your prayers while I was ill. I also got bit by some weird bugs. The top picture, that's the back of my leg. I think I got bit by a spider. And it had swelled up to like the size of my palm, and it was so painful I couldn't really walk properly. And also the humidity sucks. Humidity is not my friend. I don't like the humidity. And so I really struggled with the heat because I arrived at the end of their summer. So it was about 34 degrees, but with the humidity, it feels like 38. And so when it gets really hot, I get these like heat bumps, which are tiny itchy blisters all over my hands and feet. And when it's really bad, I get them on my hands. And in Bolivia, it was so bad, all my entire hands were covered. My feet were completely covered. So this picture is my feet on a good day. And so as well as having the heat bumps and as well as like the mosquito bites, my feet were like a mess and they'd often bleed from like me scratching them, and I've got scars all over my feet. So that was not a good part of my trip. So, transport in Bolivia. Transport in Bolivia is great. It's really cheap and there's tons of buses and taxis right at your doorstep, and like you have the freedom to go anywhere you want, which is really, really good. But the vehicles themselves aren't that good. The taxis, so the doors don't fit properly, the windscreen will be smashed, the wires are all exposed, and like you'll be breathing in carbon monoxide, so I've probably shortened my life by like a week just by being in those taxis. The drivers will be chewing on the coca leaf, they'll be chewing like a big ball of it, and so that gives them like a huge caffeine boost. And so yeah, so it's not the safest, and they drive really, really fast, and you feel like you're gonna die. My favorite cars were the British cars, so as you can see, rather than just leaving the steering wheel on the other side, they move it to the left-hand side along with the pedals, leaving all the wires exposed and the speedometer and all that, which they were my favorite cars. Basically, the more dangerous the car, the cheaper the ride, so they were the ones that we always went with. And then the buses. The buses only cost 2 Bs, which I have some money here, which you can look at later. So this is a 2B coin. So that's your bus fare ticket. So it's about 23p. And so it doesn't matter how long you're on the bus for, it always costs 2Bs, which is great. None of like this Arriva nonsense where you charge £5 for a return ticket. So No, I definitely prefer those prices. The buses, as you can see, can get very crowded. So it's like the perfect opportunity for thieves to like pickpocket you. Thankfully, I never actually got mugged, which was really good. And also, again, the bus drivers will be chewing on the coca leaf, and most of them will be high on cocaine as well. One time, I was sitting at the front of the bus next to the driver, and he was there snorting cocaine from his finger while he was driving along, and I was like, great, this is going to be a good journey. So yeah, the transport, yeah, is interesting, shall we say. So food in Bolivia, the markets, they're my favorite place to go. They're so interesting, you just go and everything you'd ever thought you need is at the market. It may not work, but it's there. And the food market is great as well. The meat section is interesting. They have the raw meat sitting on the counters in 33 degree heat with the flies going everywhere. So yeah, and the smell is awful. It's not something I will miss at all. But the fruit and veg market was amazing. Like, there's so much choice and it's really cheap as well. Like, I was able to get like big mangoes and grapefruits for only like 30p, and it was really, really great. So I'll be missing that. So Bolivian food in general, Bolivia is like the culinary black hole. The food is very, very bland, and because it's poor people food, because people in Bolivia are very poor. So the food is there just to fill you up rather than for comfort and for enjoyment. So this is a typical Bolivian meal. So you have your meat, which is usually chicken or steak, along with cheesy rice, plantain, which is like a banana, except it's more carby, and also corn and yuca, which is a root vegetable as well. So yeah, so that's a typical Bolivian meal. My least favorite food was the cheese. It's very bad cheese. It's really rubbery and it's very expensive as well. It's like £10 for a kilo of cheddar. And this is really bad cheddar as well. So it's not good, not good cheese. This is the snack food of Bolivia. So the top one, a salteña. They're my favorite, a bit like Cornish pasties, except it's more stew-like inside. And then the middle one is an empanada. So they're filled with cheese and often dusted with icing sugar. They're pretty good. And the last one is a cunyape. And so they're like a little cheese dough ball and they're pretty good. I brought some hardened cunyapes from Bolivia for you to try at the end, along with a Bolivian sweet. It's made from purple corn, and high in the mountains, they make a thick purple corn drink called api, and it's really, really filling, and it's really, really good. So there's two kids who wanna come and try a cunyape before we move on. They're very good, this little cheese ball. Harvey, do you wanna come try one? Anybody else? Molly? Daniel, put your hand down. They're pretty hard, so you gotta like properly bite into them. What do you think?
No.
Pretty good? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're a bit crumbly. So yes, yeah, so you got those to enjoy at the end of the service. Here's some of the fruit that I was able to try while out there. So they had prickly pear, which is from the cacti, and a chirimoya. It's kind of slimy. And you know how in the Adam and Eve story, we use the apple as the fruit Adam and Eve eat? They use the chirimoya. And the bottom one, acerola, it's like a cherry, but it's packed full of vitamin C. So one acerola is equal to about 3 oranges in the amount of vitamin C it contains. So, and then the Bolivian fruit, the achachairu, is a bit like a lychee, if you know what one of those are. It's very sweet, it's very nice. And the pacay, it's a pod and you break it open and you eat the white stuff. It's a bit like candy floss. It's very sweet, it's very good. And then they also had star fruits and cocoa pods, which you could eat, which they would make into chocolate later. So now I've got a quiz. What's a family service without a quiz? So I'm gonna ask my beautiful assistant, Daniel, to come to the front and to help give out the sweets as prizes. So to make sure you were all listening, I've got some questions for you. So What is the organization I went with to Bolivia? Harvey, you were first. Sam, yes. The South American Mission. There we go. Two, what is the main language spoken in Bolivia?
Spanish.
Si, well done. What sea borders Bolivia? Molly. Ah, well done. It's a trick question. But they still have a navy. They pay Chile to rent a port so they can still practice so that when they attack Chile again, they'll be ready. It doesn't make sense, but hey. What city did I live in? Molly, anybody else? Thomas? Well done. Which one is the Bolivian flag? Oh, try again. Yeah, there you go. What are the names of my Bolivian brothers? Can you remember? Go on then. Yes, there you go. Well done. Can you name the fruit? This one's a difficult one. Well, you said that. Oh, go on then. Since someone's asked you, you can have that. The achacharu. So, which one is the sultania? That's correct. So this one has a bonus question. So how many countries border Bolivia and which ones are they? Here you go, Molly.
I think it's three.
Oh, no.
I think two of them are Chile and Brazil.
No. Anybody else want to guess? How many? Anybody? Yes, Jonathan, it is five. Can you name them all?
No.
Guess. You got five.
Brazil.
Uh-huh. Brazil.
Peru.
Peru. Chile.
Uruguay.
Nope.
Argentina.
Yes. One more. Well done, Mum. There you go. So they're the five countries that border Bolivia. And the final question, with a bonus point as well, how much does it cost to go on the bus? You put your hand up, yes? Two? Uh-huh. And do you know the UK currency? It's in... There you go, yes. Well done. So, that's the end of our quiz. Daniel, I'll take those sweets so you don't eat them all. So, what I did in Bolivia. So for 3 days a week, I worked at the Santa Cruz Christian Learning Center, the SCCLC, which is an American-run school there. And I was a teaching assistant with year two. I also helped teach PE and helped out in the chapel services for primary school and middle school. So the top picture, that's my class. We were celebrating the 101st day of school, so we had to dress up as Dalmatians, which was very fun. And in the bottom right picture, it was a hat day, so you had to wear funky hats. So my kids were great. I really loved them all. And we just had tons of fun together. And But one of the things I wasn't told about the school before going was that it was a private school, so all the families were rich. And if you're rich in Bolivia, you're really, really rich. So these kids, they had their own maids, they have huge houses, and they'd never really had to do anything for themselves. So it was surprising with the older kids in high school how even though they're living in a third world country, they're like unaware to the poverty that just sits at their doorstep. So for me, when I went, that was a bit of a shock. I was like, oh, okay then. But yeah, I really enjoyed my time at the school. I also helped out with English lessons, teaching some of the parents from the school English. So this is the teachers that I helped. And it was interesting because they were learning American English. So I had to learn two languages, Spanish and American English. So the differences are very funny. One of their favorite ones, the British words that we have, is a lollipop man, because they use a crossing guard. So lollipop man for them was just like insane. They found it hilarious. So the rest of my time, Serena, the lady in the top left corner, she was Megan's and my intern mum, and she would take us around the different ministries that Sam has going on. So Serena herself, she's living in Bolivia for 2 years, and she runs a teacher training ministry for Sunday school teachers to be able to better teach the kids the Bible. So we were visiting a church that she just finished teaching. So this church is in a really, really poor neighborhood, and they're known to have multiple gangs. And yet, despite the kids' living conditions and having nothing, they were always smiling and like having fun, which was really great to see. So Proclama, the other one, is run by a lady called Dana, who's been living in Bolivia for just over 20 years now. So Proclama, it trains and teaches Bolivians themselves to go out and be missionaries. And so in this photo, I'm part of a sketch showing the different unreached people groups to a church who is sending out their very first missionary, which is very exciting. So some of the Bolivians taught through Proclama have been able to go into countries not easily accessible to be able to go and preach the gospel and tell people about Jesus, which is really great. And during my trip, I was able to visit the Wigner family. So they live in San Jose, and they're a family of soon to be six. And one of the things that they do is they're developing a plot of land that will be used as camps to train and disciple people. So I was able to camp out on the land with a visiting church, and it was amazing. We were sleeping in hammocks under the stars, surrounded by tons and tons of bugs. And so this is the kitchen area of the land. So they've now developed that, and they've been able to build like a furnace oven, and they're building a house for a couple to be able to stay there permanently. And they've actually got their first working toilet out there, which is very exciting for them. Oh. And then I was also able to visit Cochabamba and visit the Freemans there, the family in the picture. So they're church planters in Cochabamba. And one of the things Megan and I were able to do while there was visit the burns unit of a children's hospital. So it's not a nice UK children's hospital where it's all bright and colourful and nice. The walls are all bare, the kids aren't allowed toys or games, and they're only allowed to see their parents for 1 hour each day. So it was really challenging to see these kids all in a tiny room completely covered in like third degree burns. And there was a one child, Wilbur, who is 2 years old. He was completely covered from head to toe in burns. And so because of his age, he had to be strapped down in a wheelchair all day to stop himself from scratching at the burns. And then at night, he'd be strapped down on his back to the bed so that he couldn't move and scratch himself again. So it was really difficult to see that, because like you just feel so useless to these kids, because you're only allowed there for 15 minutes. So like, how are you meant to help these poor kids? So that was a really hard part of my trip, seeing that. But now on to the exciting part of my trip, for when I went into the Amazon rainforest on the medical trip along the Beni River. So this is the plane that took us to the boat, and the bottom picture there, that was the runway. I got to sit at the front of the plane, which was very exciting, and that there is the boat that we lived on for 10 days. So this is the room in which I slept in. I had the hammock, so I need a taller volunteer to come and try out this hammock I have to see how you would sleep in it. Molly, do you want to come? Uh-huh. Okay. So hop on in. It shouldn't fall or anything. Mm-hmm. So lie in completely. Get your legs in. There you go. So there's a special way to sleep in hammocks. As you can see here, I don't know if you can see from the back, but her spine's all curved. So if you sleep like that, you're going to end up with a really bad back. So there's a special way which you have to sleep in hammocks. So if you can, you're going to try angle yourself diagonally. So put your head at one end and your feet at the other. So you're pushing out the canvas so it lies flat. It's kind of hard in this one because it's not a very big hammock, but she's doing a very good job. So that's how you sleep in a hammock. Thank you, Molly, for your cooperation. Hope you found it comfy. So I had to sleep in a hammock for the duration of the trip. So I had to sleep like that and hope that nobody would bump into me while they were getting out. And then this is the bathroom on the boat. So the toilet flushes straight into the river, and then the shower uses the water from the river. So we tended to shower while the boat was moving, so we didn't get the dirty water. And so the next few photos I'm going to show you are views from that window in the bathroom. So this collection of photos is called A Poo with a View. So there's this one. So this is what we'd see while we were like showering and stuff as the boat was moving. And some more. And then other ones that we saw. So the food on the boat. So it was again full of carbs. We ate fish and rice twice a day for the duration of the trip. So we caught and ate piranhas, which is the first picture. They're pretty good. It's not a lot of meat on them. And then we also caught alligators, which is very tasty. And I was also able to hold a little baby alligator, if you can see there. So yeah. So the first picture, that is the medical trip team. It's a mixture of doctors, dentists, pharmacists, translators, chefs, and crew members. And it was a mix of Cuban, Bolivian, Americans, and with me being the only Brit on the team. So we all lived together on the boat for 10 days, traveling up the Beni River, which is a tributary of the Amazon River. And we visited a total of 12 villages, taking clothes, holding church services, treating them medically, and giving them the correct medication they needed, and also dental services. Almost everybody that the dentist saw had to have at least one tooth removed, because there's some people, you see like the old ladies who already have almost zero teeth, and they're there having more teeth pulled out, and you just feel really sorry for them because they're not going to be able to eat anything. And so one of the American medical students in this picture, she brought a portable ultrasound machine. And so we were able to give scans to the pregnant women that we saw, which was very exciting for them because it was their very first ultrasound. So they were able to see their baby and find out the gender for the very first time like this. So that was a really huge deal for them. So I worked in the pharmacy with Rosie. And she only spoke Spanish and only spoke very, very fast. So my listening skills had to improve very, very quickly because otherwise I had no clue what I was doing. So I couldn't tell at the start between when she was saying Spanish words or the drug names because I was like, I don't know what you're saying. I'm really sorry. But then from Wednesday onwards, I was the one telling the patients when and how to take their medication. So my Spanish improved very quickly on that trip. And then I also got to take care of some really great kids and teaching them volleyball and just, you know, playing with these kids. They really love my hair because they've never really seen blonde hair before, let alone curly hair. So they found it really, really fascinating. And we also saw some pretty cool medical cases while there. There was one guy who 6 months ago dislocated his leg. And so for 6 months, he'd been walking around with one leg shorter than the other. And so then we come along and we see that and we're like, we need to fix that. And so we pull his leg out and then have to put it back in or without any painkillers or anything. And then there was another boy. He earlier on in the year, he had been fixing a nail and he had cut it and it got infected. So his thumb had gone and swollen up where all the infection was. So we had to drain his thumb from all the pus and everything that was in it. And if we hadn't done that and left it, then maybe later it would have actually had to be amputated. So, yeah. So for these people, going to a real hospital isn't an option because you can see how isolated and remote they are. And so to travel to a real hospital takes about a week. So along with the traveling costs and the medical bills on top of that, it's just impossible for them. So the fact that we were going to them and for free as well was a really huge deal for them. That was the miracle for them. So what I learned on my trip. So over my time in Bolivia, I learned an awful lot. So I just want to share a couple of the key moments with you guys. So at the start, I mentioned how it's direction, not intention, that determines our destination. And so that really hit me. So if I'm not heading in the right direction, no matter how much I think I'm doing the right thing, I'm still going to end up in the wrong place. And so a verse that stuck with me from that is Psalm 25, verse 4. It says, "Show me the path where I should walk, O Lord. Point out the right road for me to follow." So, yeah, so that's now an important verse for me. And another thing that I really grasped over this trip is how I need to fully trust in God and what he's doing and what he's going to do, and also to be excited about it. Because I've been a Christian from a very young age, so I don't really have like the fresh Jesus moment that new believers have. So when people say like, "Oh, God's doing great things," I'm like, yeah, I know. Because like, I've been told it my entire life, so I've believed it because it's true. But I've never really grasped that truth. And that God is doing great things and he will do great things. Because I've seen it and I've also been lucky enough to be a part of it as well. And the excitement for God's work was what I realized I was missing. Like that excitement and expectation for God to do great things. So, for example, it says in Joshua 6, 1 to 2, "Now the gates of Jericho were tightly shut because the people were afraid of the Israelites. No one was allowed to go in or out. But the Lord said to Joshua, 'I have given you Jericho, its king, and all its warriors.'" So the Israelites had been wandering for 40 years, and that's like a crazy long time. And now after this huge wait, God's just gone and told them that this big city was theirs. And it seemed impossible. Like, Jericho's this huge city. No way would they be able to conquer it and beat it by themselves. But they just needed to trust God and what he had promised them. They were probably confused by how God said that it was theirs, but the point is he said that it was theirs. So how could they not be excited? They just needed to take that step of faith and trust that God has got them. So for me, my Jericho, the big thing that I needed to overcome was going to the Beni. So going to the Amazon has been on my bucket list since like the very, very start. And I was really looking forward to going as soon as I signed up. But the night before and the morning of going, I was scared because I'd been told how hard this trip was going to be, how difficult it was and dangerous, and how one guy on the trip had actually died being on that trip. So naturally, I was freaking out. And I'd been really ill the few days before leaving. And so the doctors were telling me that I shouldn't really be going either. But I was like, I still want to go. So the morning I left, I called my mum, and she prayed, and she told me to read Psalm 121, which is my favorite. And it says, I look up to the mountains, where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let you stumble and fall. The one who watches over you will not sleep. Indeed, he who watches over Israel never tires and never sleeps. The Lord himself watches over you. The Lord stands beside you as your protective shade. The sun will not hurt you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. So after reading and praying, I was at peace with going, and the worry that I had was now replaced with excitement. Excitement for what I was about to see and what I was about to be a part of for the next 10 days. So I was trusting God with all the technical parts, like not getting ill or dying, because that's what he'd promised he'd do. And the trip was perfect. As soon as I got there, I was like, what was everybody complaining about? Like, the boat was safe, the food was like fine, and the views were amazing. The people were great. Yeah, the bugs sucked, but that's the jungle for you. But I was just so excited for what God was going to do through this trip and to be somewhere so amazing that he'd made. Like, I was in the Amazon rainforest. And so through that trip, so many people became Christians and were able to give life-saving medication as well. And I was just so blessed and thankful to be able to be a part of that trip. And thank you guys for wanting to be a part of that journey with me as you prayed and supported me with this trip. So to tie it all together, I made a quick video for you all to enjoy over my time there. So, yeah.